Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Speaking of Reliability. Today, I'm here with Fred Schenkelberg. Fred, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, Adam. Thanks.
Good. We reversed the roles a little bit for this one, which we do sometimes, because I had a question and something I was thinking about that I kind of had poised to you, and we began discussing it. And of course, before we know it, we're like, hey, wait a minute, we should hit the record button. So that's what we're doing.
That's right. Otherwise, we'll spend an hour talking about it and then go, wait a sec, we should have recorded that.
How many times have we done that?
I don't want to count. Yeah.
And then it's impossible to recapture the original conversation. It sounds like you're scripting it, so it's lost forever.
That's right.
So this one was, we were talking about I use the word awakening a lot. Mm-hmm. When you begin to see organizations becoming aware of their need to improve, implement more reliability and quality practices. And I kind of was asking you, what are some different indicators you've seen? You know, there's lots of analogies you can make to when people change their life. Personally, like, you know, as an analogy, like you decide, hey, I got to start exercising more. Hey, I have to, you know, pick up a hobby. Hey, I need to spend more time, blah, blah, blah. And there's usually kind of a lot of, if you talked with a group of people who'd experienced, you know, that similar or made that similar change, there probably would be some common themes of indicators. You know, it could be, hey, I find that I get winded when I walk up two flights of stairs. That's not right. You know, that's ridiculous. I need to exercise. I need to change my diet or something, you know. And, you know, there might be the more severe version of, I just came back, you know, I ended up in the ER last night with they thought I had a heart attack, or I did have a heart attack, or I just heard, now I know I have diabetes and I have to take insulin. And, you know, those are very severe wake up, and there's, you know, usually different degrees. So what have you experienced as far as, you know, when you see leadership, you know, start to make that change? What are some of the awakening moments?
Well, I can point to a whole slew of them from my, you know, reading and history and talking to people. One of the things I used to do when I would visit a site, whether in HP and then later with client sites, and, you know, we usually would be together for lunch or for a break or something like that. And then, you know, I wanted to change the subject from talking about whatever the subject of our visit was or class or whatever. And I would say, so what disasters have you had? You know, what are the common legends and lores that you have here in this organization? And it's interesting, in every organization I've been in, there's been this consistent set of stories about how they either had a recall or a near recall, or they had this, you know, moment, like you're saying, an awakening that just pivots the organization and the focus. And, The most famous one that I know of is Hewlett-Packard in the 80s was starting to move into more consumer products. They started making PCs mid-80s, basically, but they also had moved into lots of other product lines, medical devices, and the test and measurement field was expanding and all kinds of stuff. And the company was really growing. And Steve Young, the CEO, in 1982 or 1983, was looking at the warranty costs, the cost of failures. And he says, this is just unacceptable. It was about 4% of net revenue, which is a lot of money. And they were counting quite a bit against the warranty costs. And he basically laid out a dictum to the whole company. And I don't know exactly where he got the idea, but I think it was the financial reports. And it might have been stockholders, or it might have come from internally. He might have read a book or got winded going up a flight of stairs. But he was looking at, they were spending about 7-8% of net revenue on R&D, and hundreds, if not thousands, of engineers and managers creating products. And they had nobody really looking at quality and warranty and field returns and things like that. Yet it was half of the R&D budget. And I, I think it was that realization that they said, hey, we got to fix this. So he basically told the rest of the organization, by the end of the decade, we're going to reduce our warranty costs by an order of magnitude. And they called it, ended up being called the 10X initiative. But then he followed up, and every meeting, every discussion, every, all hands meeting on the quarterly reviews, and every time he met with his leadership team, it was, where are we on making this goal? And so he followed through. So for that organization at that time, it was the CEO that said, we're going to do this. And then he followed through with it.
That sounds like a very healthy one, though.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to start off with the car accident.
Yeah, no. And I didn't really want to go there either. A lot of those are kind of obvious, right? I was interested actually in ones of like exactly when you gave kind of more of this kind of awakening, you know, an awareness, not, you know, and that's why I said like the flight of stairs as opposed to the just had a heart attack, you know. That's the obvious one, and usually doesn't stick as well actually as the one that's the flight of stairs where you're open enough. I guess that's kind of interesting because it's a little bit, I guess, more specifically what I'm asking about is to people who have heart attacks, everybody reacts the same way to that, you know, like, oh my God, I have to change, da 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 da. And it's because it was such a severe thing to jolt you into it, the chances of you probably staying with it are not as likely as the type of person that takes note of that, hey, I'm getting winded more easily than I should, you know, and that kind of person who has more of kind of a proactive mindset. So that would actually be an interesting direction to go with this. What are some others that you know of that are more of those kind of come from people who have a proactive mindset like that CEO you just discussed?
Well,
or VP?
Yeah, it was, I think another case, it was a client I was working with years ago, and they were building products that went, it was a medical device that was installed in homes, and there was only really 4 or 5 customers, these organizations that would essentially leasing the equipment into homes, and they would go in and set it up, and the devices were prescribed. A doctor would prescribe this stuff, and then there were only a few channels that you could fulfill that prescription. So it was a very small market from this company's point of view. They were losing market share steadily over a number of years. And the number one reason, the thing they heard back from these small group of customers essentially was your product fails too much. We have to roll the truck to the patient's house and replace it way too often compared to your competitors. So it was a combination of competitive pressure, but customer feedback saying, hey, look, it just isn't reliable. And it was very deliberate messages they're getting. And it was just part of they were seeing it in the financials, they were seeing it in their market share. And then as they started to listen to their customers, and this was a program manager and a marketing manager were the two people that were trying to figure out how do we turn this around. And they realized that it was the product reliability itself. It was something that they'd always given lip service to and says, oh, it has to work, it has to be reliable, but they didn't really know how to do that. So their awakening was we have to pay attention to this and learn what we don't know. What we don't know, which is how do you design for reliability? How do you measure it? How do you make improvements? Those kinds of things. But it took them, from that initial point, it became some training and it became some working on a particular program. It took 3 generations of product development, 3 different projects they worked on before they became self-sustained. But it goes back to, you know, these two managers really got pushed into this issue. And Steve Young, the CEO of HP at the time, I mean, he saw the opportunity there. But I think it's whether you have a heart attack or you have a bad financial quarter, and you can see warranty is a piece of it, is it still takes somebody to follow through to actually invest in exercise equipment, using a heart attack as an example, or out of shape, and then get on it and use it. So
that's the word, follow through. See, that's the interesting differentiator, I think, is the follow through one.
Well, we see plenty of companies that they have a big disaster and they throw a bunch of money into reliability, you know, they might hire a pile of consultants or they hire a bunch of people. And then 3-4 years later, they go, well, everything's great. What do we need you for? And then they get rid of it.
Right. Right. Oh, you're always doomed if you're in a mindset like that as a reliability or quality person, because when things are going bad, they're going to, it's the reliability and quality department's fault. When things are going well, it's why do we need them? And exactly. So those aren't the people that really understand or have the mindset or will be able to follow through long term. In any, you know, kind of quality or reliability or other organizational matrix, the highest level of, you know, evolution always is defined by we know why we're not having problems. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's that follow through. You continually monitor, understand, and diagnose even problems you're not having. You know which ones could be the ones that get you, and you're mitigating them before they happen. So that's that. You're not just following through on a specific issue. You've changed the way you do things to where you're always, you know, proactively and basically with prognostics, just about looking for indicators and fixing things before they happen. But you know the ones that would have got you. So that's the, you know, it's interesting. And I'm very curious about the journey people go on to become those.
Well, I mean, in a different way, another organization I work with, these guys were the very first client I ever did work with, is they weren't up against the wall. They didn't have a competitive reason, all these other things. They just had an inherent desire within the organization to improve. They had a pretty healthy quality organization that was, and their design organization was already with the emphasis of, you know, we've got cool technology, we've got expanding customer base, we're doing great, but if we sit still, we're doomed. We need to continuously improve on all these fronts. And so they showed me their plot of essentially their warranty returns, and and they had driven the warranty failure rate, the field failure rate, down over the last 5 or 6 years. And initially it was pretty, they said it was easy. There was lots of obvious stuff once we started paying attention to it, but it plateaued and it went to kind of a flat line over the last 2 years. And we just don't know what to do next. And so their motivation was seeing that they weren't making progress and recognizing they didn't know what to do. So for their reliability program, they asked for help. And so it was a combination of training and assessment and where to go. What was interesting, it was their general manager was an impediment for them to make progress. And that was an interesting outbriefing on the assessment with the general manager sitting there. And I was basically telling him it was his fault and gave him examples.
Nice. No way out, buddy.
Yeah.
No way out.
And he was sitting between me and the door too. And he was white knuckles on the, he was a volatile guy. And I think the staff, as a quick aside here, the staff knew he was the problem because of changing priorities, a variety of other things he did. But nobody was brave enough to tell him. So they hired me, an outsider, to come in, you know.
Sure.
I never thought I'd work there again. This guy basically said in his clenched teeth, you know, that's enough. Get out.
Right. You were the expendable. You were
I was the expendables. Yeah. The quality director saw me out to the door and he was like, oh, that was awesome. That was great. I think you got the message. I'm like, yeah, thank you.
You're like, yeah, he sure did look like he got the message.
They ended up being one of my, a really, really good client. And the guy called me back. This general manager called me back and he says, you know, what you told me made sense. So his, you know, moment, awakening moment, was recognizing that he was part of the problem. He was continuing to push the organization to improve and so on, but then he saw how the system, the structures that he was setting up, impeded that. And so then we actually made some progress. So for him, it was a slap in the face by some rude consultant. Essentially.
Yeah.
And so it was funny, about 5 years, even more than that, almost 7 years later, they called me again and showed me a very similar plot showing the progress they made initially after I'd talked to them previously, and then it flattened out again. It was an order of magnitude lower failure rates, but they were still faced with the same problem. Now what do we do?
Right.
Right. And so we engaged and talk about that. But sometimes it's that follow through, but it's recognizing what's all in the system. You can't just focus on warranty returns and sort out what are the no trouble founds. You know, that can help, but it's not going to solve that you're still getting products out there at that failure rate. You need to get the design team involved, or you need to move other areas of the organization.
Yeah.
So I think the question you asked is, Scott, oh, I could keep going. I got dozens of stories that are like that, but it's the notion is that either somebody reads the book or gets told by their doctor or puts two and two together on their financial statement or recognizes an opportunity, but then follows through and has either the wherewithal or the openness to recognize what they don't know and how can they fix those things, but then have a passion for it to create that vision for the other parts of your organization.
Yep.
You know, so there's plenty of reliability engineers that recognize there's something they could do different, but if they're not instrumental in creating that vision for other people, they're just
there always are people in there who see it, but yeah, so many of them are muted, a good word. I don't know, but they they can't, you know, that they're either there's concern for express, like as you in your case, they had to hire somebody from the outside to say what they already, you know, knew. So it's interesting.
Well, you know, we're both consultants, so and I actually got hired into a spot where this guy was actually, it was an aerospace company, and the director of reliability had way more experience than me. I was like, why am I here? You know way more about this stuff than I do, and it's your company. And he goes, well, they're tired of listening to me. Mm. You know, they want somebody from far away, you know, that comes in and tells them they can hear you better than they can hear me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I says, well, geez, why don't you just tell me what your recommendation is and we're done and then we can go golfing. Yeah. And he goes, no, I want to see if you find anything different. This is a test.
Yeah. That sounds like a good guy.
He was a great guy. And I learned a lot working with him. And they actually had a really good reliability program. It was just that next level. And for his board and his senior managers, in order to get the next level funded, all they needed was somebody else to confirm what the guys internally were saying reinforce it. So there's parts of it that it's the messenger. So if you're the general CEO or general manager, you've got position power and on your side, whereas a reliability engineer that's a new hire out of the manufacturing group doesn't necessarily have the position power, but both people have to create the potential. If we fix this, here's the benefit to the organization, to the customer, to our financial position. Kind of that future state vision stuff has got to be part of it. But I think more importantly is that it's that term of the follow through, the consistent pressure, the bringing it up on a regular basis where it's appropriate, and then putting the infrastructure in place, whether you're a CEO, general manager, or a reliability engineer is, well, how do we interpret the field failure data? How does our decision on picking a capacitor impact the field returns? All of those pieces have to come together. But the moment of awakening can come from, I think the analogy of walking up the stairs and getting winded is somebody has to recognize that. You might have walked up the stairs, you know, for the last 6 years and been winded every time and just hadn't really noticed it. But sometimes somebody has to pay attention. And whether a customer tells you directly is kind of a hard way to hear that message or a hard way to get exposed to that message. Others will be somebody new in the organization creates a presentation that just makes sense, finally breaks through the haze of so much information and hits them on the right day.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was in the Army, I learned about a technique that was called a significant emotional event is the only way to change your behavior. Is so if somebody was always late, was always misbehaving, was always whatever, wasn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, you can give them an Article 15, you can, you know, withdraw privileges, you can do all these things as a commander, but that almost never actually change the behavior. They just get more clever at not getting caught. But creating a significant emotional event.
That's a nice way of saying yeah. Soap in a sock, you know, getting beaten.
Well, no, we weren't allowed and weren't able to do that. But it depends on the person. And the soldier analogy breaks down with an organization pretty quickly. But the parallel for an organization is, you know, three more quarters like this and we're out of business.
Right.
And somebody saying, hey, this isn't good. Or like John Young, John Young, that was his name, CEO at HP, that said, hey, we're spending half of our R&D budget, the equivalent of half our R&D budget on failed products. Why don't we just design it right?
Yeah, right. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting all the levels. I've seen even ones that are so impressive that they didn't have an issue, but just were aware enough to know that what the field around them was changing, that if they didn't respond, you know, they would have a problem. And that was so unique to see that mm-hmm. kind of self-awareness. I guess it's interesting. It's the full gamut, and it's really interesting to study and hear other people's experiences.
Well, it's an interesting topic, but why did you ask this question? What prompted you to even pursue this? You got a customer that you need to create have them become aware of their situation? Or?
No, it's just something that I have a strong personal interest in because, as you know, I kind of talk about reliability culture a lot. You know, I have I sit down long enough and I come up with an idea of the difference between rice farming and wheat farming, mm-hmm. driving attitudes towards things and, you know, with the cultural and so many of my customers, so much of me even being able to implement the tools I advise to use, there is always a whole process of acceptance of the tools. And, you know, I get to experience that over and over again. And I find that just being able to, for me to better facilitate people's, you know, personal transformation into how they believe and in these methods and see how they work and how they understand how they can help them, dramatically, you know, changes how fast this all can work. So, mm-hmm. you know, so it's really interesting. Yeah. And I want to continue to study it and hear examples and see, you know, what's out there. And, you know, at some point, maybe I'll try to document it all in one big thing. But it's just such a fascinating part to see the psychological side of this, because so much of what we talk about is these, whenever you talk with anybody about not even just reliability, but other engineering things and the product development process, it's always very clearly laid out in a textbook, but getting it to happen within an organization as a whole wild psychological, you know, study and experiment. And as you mentioned with the military, right? I mean, with anything, military tactics are very clean cut, but having how it works with, you know, a team, with soldiers, you know, with a unit, that's a whole psychological study as far as it being actually implemented. So yeah, it's just kind of a neat thing.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, we should probably wrap it up here. I think our listeners will probably be, hopefully, every one of them was nodding going, oh, I have a story to tell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure they did. That was good. But all right. Well, Fred, thank you for taking the time to chat about it. And everybody, thank you for listening. And please feel free to comment. We love getting feedback on this. And Fred, it's pretty exciting. You told me the stats recently that we have over 10,000 downloads.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is fantastic. And our, you know, pretty soon our 100th episode is going to be coming out too, where all the co-hosts got together. So that'll be fun.
Well, if we can ever get it all edited. Diane looked at me. My wife, who does a lot of the audio editing, she looked at me, you have 6 tracks on this thing?
And you're like, so I'm going out and getting some flowers.
That's right. It's nice. That's right. Yeah, I rely on her quite a bit to get the editing done. But yeah, it's pretty exciting. We had everybody online at the same time, and now we just need to get it cleaned up so it sounds good. Yeah. And And we record another, what, another 10 more episodes, I think, when we're recording this one.
That's good. Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. And thank you, Fred. And we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.